What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the debut episode of Home and Away, New Ceilings' newest show that we're releasing on a week that has just been flooded with new announcements. I'm Stephen Gillespie of the Draft Deeper podcast. Obviously, I'm part of the No Ceilings Collective here, and I couldn't think of a better guest to join me today to help break in the brand new season, the brand new episode of Home and Away with Deep Dives, Nick Agar-Johnson. Nick, how you doing, man?
I don't know. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would be a better guest than me. Just, you know, all things considered. Wow. That's in high praise. I'm not sure I can accept that, but
maybe second episode.
Sure. Yeah. We'll get him for the next Home and Away. That works.
Well, how's everything going, man? I know that NBA basketball kicked off recently. Keegan Murray looked like he had himself a heck of a season debut. How's basketball treating you right now?
Man, this is the happiest 0-2 start of my Sacramento Kings fandom. You know, that's such a low bar to clear. But honestly, I mean, Keegan looked incredibly impressive yesterday. The Kings played a title contender, granted without Kawhi, but a title contender in the Clippers to a 2-point loss. They were competitive until the final minute against the Portland Trailblazers in their opening game. And a couple of the Kings players who normally have been, you know, steadying forces have not played their best so far in the first two games. I mean, Harrison Barnes has not looked great. Rashawn Holmes has not had his best couple of games. And even still, the Kings were incredibly competitive and Keegan Murray was super exciting in his debut. So yeah, you know, the Kings are 0-2, but it's an optimistic 0-2, which, you know, given that it's the Kings, I'm sure like 3 weeks from now, I'm going to feel incredibly stupid from having said that, but you know, as far as King starts go, this one's been pretty solid so far. So I'm happy about that on the basketball front.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to blame you. And they're also like new pieces, new parts. You got to figure out rotations, a new coach. So there's a lot of figuring things out. So hopefully, as the season goes along, man, the Sacramento Kings will turn things around. I'm optimistic for them too. I was coming into the year, but Nick, the reason that you're the ideal guest for the show and not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is because, listen, this week has been full of a bunch of fun announcements. You know, we're on this brand new podcast feed where all of our shows are going to be playing all throughout the week long, Monday through Friday. You're going to hear a brand new show here on No Ceilings NBA, wherever you get your podcasts. And all of our collective are going to be contributing to that. On top of that, there's new merch that is available for you to purchase. But really, the cornerstone of everything that we're kind of building our foundation on for season two, Nick, has to be the preseason draft guide that just released yesterday. And for those who are watching on YouTube, you can see this beautiful cover art that our own Corey Tolliba made, and he did his thing on this. It's like, to me, Nick, when I look at this, it reminds me of like those iconic cereal boxes of like Olympic champions. You know what I mean? Where you just like, I need to get this commemorative box edition of this cereal because the person on it is just so iconic. You know, Nick, with all these announcements, how are you feeling about the start off for season two for No Ceilings?
Man, I could not be more excited to kick off our second full year. I mean, you know, we've been releasing content throughout the off season, but really this is our big smash hit right here with the preseason guide to kick everything off as we jump into year two. I mean, it's our 1 year anniversary, I believe, today, if I'm doing my math correctly. So yeah, it's a pretty big deal. And this draft guide, I mean, it looks incredible, obviously. Of course it looks incredible because Corey did the artwork for it. But, you know, one of the great pleasures of being the editor-in-chief for No Ceilings is that I get the pre-releases of everything, you know, every article that people write, you know, all of our big sort of products, you know, our draft guide last year, our preseason guide this year. I get like the sneak preview when I'm editing it, and I just get to read through everybody's awesome work, you know, learn more about these prospects from different perspectives rather than my own of like trying to dig through film and sort of figure things out. And this guide is a ton of fun to read, a ton of fun to look at. And I'm just so excited that we're kicking off our second year, you know, not just with the podcast feed change, but with this really awesome preseason grad.
Yeah, it's just a culmination of a bunch of great work that the guys have been putting in during this offseason, you know, and I can't say guys anymore because we also just added Paige, who has just been an outstanding contributor already, hitting the ground running on our social medias and things like that. She's been just a joy to have on the team as well. So, Nick, this draft guide, it can be found on noceilingsnba.bigcartel.com. The theme of it, we already talked about, it's just an iconic look, man. But how does this compare to the draft guide that we just released for this previous class? You know, I mean, it's a preseason guide, and the other one was just a draft guide leading up into the draft. So obviously there's that difference. But when you're flipping the pages, so to speak, like, what stands out to you from this edition to the last?
So I think the biggest difference between this preseason guide and the draft guide that we released sort of towards the end of the last draft cycle is we had a set big board of the 58 guys, you know, who we collectively voted on as a team for the draft guide. Whereas here with the preseason guide, you know, there's a lot more up in the air. I mean, college basketball hasn't started yet. Victor and Scoot have had their, you know, little two-game dance, which we'll certainly get into in a bit. You know, Overtime Elite has had a few games, as Nathan covered in his column that were released yesterday. But, you know, I think the biggest difference between the draft guide and the preseason guide is, you know, the preseason guide is sort of, you know, a look at a detailed look at the top 30 players, but not in any particular order, you know, so it's not like we've sort of locked in stone who we think the best player in the draft is, even though you and I will certainly get into that later in the podcast. But, you know, we haven't really locked that in this preseason guide. You know, it's more of a sort of overview of these guys' games, you know, how they play, where they're going to be playing next season, you know, in some cases, the players around them. Certainly there are a few guys who will be playing with other top 30 prospects that we'll, you know, get to talk about in the guide. But I think that's the biggest difference in my mind is that, you know, the preseason guide is more of an overview, whereas the draft guide, we really, you know, tried to sort of give our best order for the prospects. Preseason guide is more just, hey, this is, you know, what their games look like and where they're going to be headed next season.
For sure, yeah. And so you mentioned that we have a detailed evaluation of who we would consider like the preseason top favorites, you know, top 30 prospects, but we include 60 overall names too that we have listed in here. And then on top of that, you know, as if that wasn't enough, Nick, we went through and added a bunch more features in here. We have the Scoot versus Victor Wembanyama debate, which more on that to come here on this show. We have the Thompson twins highlighted and a Meet the Overtime Elite segment, which is really handy because I feel like, Nick, they're kind of like us, you know, in their second year, they're rolling. They have a big vibe and a lot of, you know, gravitas to them. And I don't think that people really know in detail what their roster looks like right now. So this is a great opportunity for those who are still trying to catch up to this new organization to meet some really prominent basketball players that could be playing in the NBA here soon. You know, there's a lot of people that are detailed in this segment that a lot of people may not get a chance to see just because of how new the Overtime Elite is. So this is a great way for fans, especially draft fans, to get to know some of these prospects. And then, Nick, we go around the world where we highlight some of the top international prospects that aren't playing domestically in the Overtime Elite or in collegiate basketball, but literally playing in foreign basketball clubs. So that's great too for basketball fans. We highlight some of the talented freshmen, and then we have some fun, Nick, where we always do this at No Ceilings. We have a superlative segments where we say, who's the best, fill in the blank. So out of all these segments, Nick, which one are you excited for fans to read the most out of all of those? I know it's going to be hard to pick. It's like picking your favorite kid, but which one are you excited for the most?
Well, you're the father on this podcast, so picking the favorite kid is the reference I should be making, not you. But
I think it's because it's easier for me because I am a dad. Like, you're not supposed to have the favorite, but I do. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, when the adoption papers go through, I'm sure I'm going to climb to the top of the list, but that's a different conversation. No, in terms of my favorite segment, honestly, for me, something that I think has really changed about my evaluations in the past couple of years, and shout out to Instat, they've been a huge help on this front, but just the ability to go more in depth on the international prospects. I mean, you know, the second best basketball league in the world behind the NBA is EuroLeague. And, you know, you sometimes see these guys like Tyler Metcalf and I on the NBA Deep Dives podcast went back and forth about 7 billion times about Alperen Şengün during his draft year. But, you know, I think it's really important to be able to see those guys in, you know, an excellent league like the EuroLeague. I mean, when you have a teenager like Alperen Şengün who's doing as well as he is in a professional league, I think it's really important for the evaluation, you know, comparing him going up against grown men professionals versus going up against like 19 and 20 year olds in college. So for me, I think it's really something that's easy to overlook in terms of the international game. And so, you know, getting those around the world previews is something that I really thought was excellent about this draft guide, that, you know, you're getting some looks at some of these players who will be going up against grown men in professional leagues. And, you know, maybe sometimes the stat lines don't particularly seem that impressive, but when you're getting 10 minutes a game because you're a 19-year-old playing in the second best basketball league in the world, you know, I mean, if you're doing well in 10 minutes a game in EuroLeague, there's a reason to think that there's a role for you in the NBA somewhere. But, you know, if you sort of skip over the international evaluation part of the process, you don't really get into those guys in detail until right before the draft. And that's something that I think is huge about this guide, is getting those looks into what the top international prospects look like.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I was a big Alperen Şengün guy, you know, coming into the draft. Yeah. I had him top 10, loved his game a lot. And it's really interesting that you point that out about the international prospects, because you have one side of it where their minutes are a little condensed, right, where they do play that like 10 to 15 minutes a game. And if they look good, you could see it's fun to envision how they could translate over to the NBA. But if they're absolutely dominating their leagues and winning MVP like Şengün was, then you have to start like really wondering where your evaluation process is as a scout. If you're like, okay, he dominated this league and it's a very talented league, but how is he going to hold up against NBA athleticism? Like, that's the one critique that always seems to be put out there whenever we're looking at guys like Alperen Şengün. But this draft guide, I think, helps detail, you know, the leagues themselves, but also the strengths and weaknesses of the players, certainly. And then it can make those debates like an Alperen Şengün, like how high is he going to rate? It can make fans who may not have as much access as, you know, some of the other people that are tied into the basketball community, can help make their evaluations a little bit stronger. So I'm looking forward to that aspect too. So, Nick, I felt like we did a great job of previewing the draft guide here. And what we're going to do moving forward for the rest of the show is we're going to kind of tie into one of those segments, the Scoot versus Victor Wembanyama debate. And then we're also going to get into yours and my personal preseason top five boards. Like, this is bonus content that's not included into the preseason draft guide. So we're going to be a little bit vulnerable here in the early going, and the aggregators are going to listen to everything that we're saying, Nick, and throw it at our faces whenever we change our minds as more evidence is presented before us and we figure out that some of these players might not be as good as we think. It happens every year, right? So that being said, Nick, Victor Wembanyama versus Scoot Henderson. It's not as theoretical as it was whenever we were looking at subjects to talk about for this preseason guide. Like, that actually happened. We had a no-kidding game where these two megastars, and I literally mean draft megastars, Nick, they had a battle of the ages in Las Vegas. And then the second game, we unfortunately had to see Scoot exit early. But I think his absence speaks a lot to how good he is too from that second game, right, where we saw Victor dominate again, and the Ignite looked a little unsure of themselves and their abilities without Scoot. When you watched those, Nick, did you actually walk away from the game with a different thought process or a different mindset in the Scoot versus Victor debate? Or are you still in the same camp as where you were originally?
That's a tough question. I think that my biggest takeaway is that I am much more comfortable about the gap between number two and number three in this draft than I was heading into those games. So not as much that it really changed my mind in sort of the debate between Scoot and Victor Wembanyama, but it's more just that, you know, and again, a lot of the other prospects haven't even played a game yet, so it's a bit premature, but my takeaway from those games was that those two are in a class of their own at the top of this draft. And if they'd been eligible last year, they would have been in a class of their own at the top of last year's draft, in my opinion. So, you know, I still feel the same way about those two against each other that I did heading into the games. But I came away from those games just feeling much more confident about both of them as prospects because they were both spectacular in those games.
Okay, that's fair. So let's talk about those two. Is there a how big is the gap between the two? Who do you got number one? Who do you got number two? And is there a conversation or are you sleeping well at night with where you have them ranked right now?
I mean, I don't sleep well at night anyway, so that's a different problem. But I have Victor Wembanyama as the number one prospect in this class, and I have Scoot Henderson right behind him at number two. And I think that the gap between them narrowed a little bit in the, you know, in the two games that we saw them play against each other. But for me, the thing with Wembanyama is first and foremost his defense. I mean, there was a play the other day when someone was going down the lane and Victor literally just jumps from one side of the lane to the other as the ball's in the air and blocks the alley-oop. And he's an alien. I mean, he's somewhere between 7'3 and 7'5, depending on who you ask and when you ask them. He moves like a wing, honestly, you know, on both ends of the floor, but that's particularly apparent on the defensive end where, man, he just covers like the entirety of the paint just on his own, like as soon as he gets anywhere near the rim. And his defensive ability to just absolutely wreck everything that the opposing team is trying to do. I mean, even if I was less sure about his offensive game, I think I might still consider putting him number one just because of that defensive impact that he has. But when you add in the fact that he's, you know, not only a three-point shooting big man, but someone who can shoot off movement. I mean, that's the biggest difference between him and, say, a Kristaps Porzingis type, right? Like, they were running Wembanyama off screens. You know, they were running him off pin downs out of timeouts, and he was knocking those shots down. And, you know, he also showed a little bit more craft in the lane than I'd seen from him previously. And, you know, when he's 7'5" and he can dunk, like, standing under the rim, you know, that's one thing. But, you know, his ability to, you know, make up and unders to, you know, change his shot in the air when he's around the basket, that I think will be huge, especially early on in his NBA career, you know, before he puts on 30, 40 pounds or so and, you know, becomes more of a presence down low. His ability to, you know, finish craftily in addition to just dunking over the top of people. I mean, when you combine that spacing the floor element with his craft around the basket and his incredible defensive presence, then he's the number one prospect in this class for me. So I would say Wembanyama and then Scoot.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I don't think that you're the only one that feels that way based off of if anyone who's been on Twitter or, you know, listen to any other basketball podcast, Victor Wembanyama by far and away is the number one prospect to a lot of people. And a lot of folks are saying he's the most talented prospect since LeBron James. Nick, do you agree? Or do you think that there have been other prospects in between now and then that could still contend with Victor Wembanyama as a prospect?
Man, that is a high bar. I think that there are three prospects where it sort of felt like they were going to be the number one guy from like age 15 or 16. And those three for me would be, and ironically, one of them didn't end up going number one, but those three for me were LeBron James, Luka Doncic, and Victor Wembanyama. Where it was just those guys, even when they were 15 years old, they were just dominating the competition around them. They, you know, Luka was more of a thing, you know, in Europe, certainly, than he was in the States, given that he didn't actually end up going number one overall. But I think there's a comparison to be made between those three, whereas, you know, some of the others, number one overall pick, you know, quote unquote, generational prospect types.
Right.
You know, weren't quite like, you know, Zion wasn't the number one prospect in his class until his senior year, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm not even sure he was actually the number one prospect in his high school class by the time he finished. And I guess maybe actually Andrew Wiggins is a better comparison in the sense that he was sort of the anointed number one guy in his class, you know, from very, very early on. And, you know, some people would have had Joel Embiid over him before Joel Embiid got hurt. But, you know, I think, yeah. When you're talking about those players, it's like, it's not just that they're the number one guy in their class, but it's that they were, you know, the clear number one in their class from like early, early, early on. Like, you know, LeBron was on Sports Illustrated covers at 16 and, you know, Wembanyama, I mean, I've been hearing about him since he was like 15, you know, this giant 15-year-old French kid who could really shoot. It's like, okay, this is something to watch, you know? And that's, I think, where the comparison comes in. I would say that LeBron is still more of a hype prospect than Wembanyama. I think it will be very difficult for anyone to pass LeBron in that hype, just because I think prospects are better known coming up through the ranks than they were, you know, 20 years ago at this point, which is craziness to say.
Isn't that nuts that he came out like 20 years ago? That makes me feel old, man, because and that's the funny thing about it too, Nick, is that Vic is coming up in a time where a lot of people have like their own mixtape, right? Like even Eamon and Osor Thompson, like they're internet superstars, right? And Victor Wembanyama is growing up in this era. I could only imagine what the LeBron James hype train would have been like had he come up in the social media era, when everybody has like their own mixtape and everyone has their own Instagram and Twitter following it. Like Zion Williams, like same thing, had a huge following coming into his NBA season. So it's crazy to think about what these stars of yesterday, how hyped they were, considering that the world was a little bit bigger than what it feels like it is now and how much more accessible these players are. But Nick, I have a little bit of pushback. I have Scoot Henderson as my number one prospect, and it's not that I don't think that Victor Wembanyama isn't a unique or an original talent, unlike something that we have ever seen before. Like, I see that. To me, it's just hard to wrap my head around, like, how do we adequately assess him? And if he doesn't work, like, how do we blame anybody for him not working? Because there's no blueprint. There's no foundation. There's nothing that you can say, I know exactly what the developmental path for Victor Wembanyama looks like. To me, it's something unlike we've ever seen. There's also a lot of medical stuff that, like, I'm not saying that weighs heavily into my evaluation or anything like that, but if you just look holistically at the league's history, your players 7'3" and higher, like, they have injury problems, you know? So there is that aspect to it for other people. That doesn't necessarily weigh into my evaluation, but Nick, when I look at Scoot Henderson, I just got done talking about how, like, Victor Wembanyama may be the best thing of a player that we've never seen. Scoot Henderson very well could be the best version of something that we already have seen. And to me, that speaks volumes of how talented he really is. Like, if this kid lives up to the hype and he looks like he's going to, like, he's built like a grown man at 17 years old last year when he's playing professionally. At 6'2", I know that there's like a foot and a half difference between him and Victor Wembanyama, but Scoot Henderson has a legit chance to rival some of the biggest point guard names that we've ever seen. And to me, like, that speaks to my heart. Like, that should mean something. You know, he's going to be a talented point of attack defender. He's nasty on the defensive end too, just like Vic. Granted, he's not blocking shots all over the place, but he hounds the ball handler. He gets in your jersey. He doesn't lay off. He's relentless on that end. Offensively, listen, the Ignite without him could not move the basketball. Like, he is moving other professionals, like players who have played overseas and have come and joined him in the Ignite, playing against players with NBA level experience and strength. And he is just orchestrating everything seamlessly. He's a dog mentality. He went right at Victor Wembanyama. Like, Victor couldn't even stop Scoot. Like, as much as we're singing praises to how talented Victor Wembanyama is, even he couldn't stop Scoot Henderson. So, like, in my opinion, that should also be added into the equation of how talented Scoot Henderson is. Do you see any credit or credence to what I'm saying for how talented Scoot is?
Oh, yeah. Scoot is exceptionally talented. And this, I think, goes back to something that I was saying earlier when I was talking about the Around the World segment. I mean, Scoot Henderson last year was playing against professionals as a 17-year-old and was arguably the best player on that team already last year. You know, even though the Chile Ignite, you know, had a couple of guys who got drafted pretty highly in the 2022 NBA draft. I mean, there were times when Scoot looked like the best player on the floor as a 17-year-old. I mean, there is definitely credence to, you know, the concept that there is something that we have seen before in Scoot, whereas with Wembanyama, it's a lot more up in the air. And I think for me, I mean, I would say the injury concerns for Wembanyama are the biggest issues for me at this point, because the history of 7'4", 7'5" guys health-wise, other than the guest you should have had instead of me, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the health history for those guys isn't always that great. In fact, it's usually pretty terrible. And that's the thing that concerns me the most with Wembanyama. With Scoot, I mean, the thing that has impressed me the most about his start to the season is, you know, he was a solid playmaker last year for the Ignite, but I don't think he really had as many opportunities with the ball in his hands as he has in the first few games of the season for the Ignite. Mm-hmm. And that's been the most impressive part for me with Scoot is his playmaking. And that's, I think, the biggest difference between him and Wembanyama. Wembanyama is not exactly a willing passer, and he's not a particularly brilliant passer when he does decide to make those plays. But Scoot is someone who already has a really good handle, you know, a good handle in terms of his ball handling, but also a good handle on, you know, pass versus shoot, right? Like get his teammates involved. You know, there's a lot of sort of pure point guard stuff that, you know, I saw flashes of last year, but not sort of to the same degree that he has shown in his early games. So for me, the reason that I'm slightly lower on Scoot than you are is just I'm a bit concerned about the long range shooting. I mean, he's got the mid-range pull-up down, and that's going to be very helpful for him early on. But, you know, ultimately, so many NBA teams these days, you know, either run four out or like actually five out, right? And so if you're four out and the one in is your point guard because he hasn't really gotten the handle on his three-point shot yet, that I think makes lineup constructions a lot more difficult. Whereas with Wembanyama, I mean, I don't think there's a team in the NBA that couldn't use a 7'3" guy who can shoot off screens and defend like 20 feet from the rim, you know, like and defend okay on the perimeter, can defend incredibly well around the basket. So for me, I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable at all to have Scoot number one. And quite honestly, if he shows improvement in his shooting over the course of this season, there, or if, you know, something happens with Wembanyama, I could definitely see myself moving Scoot up to number one. And I'm not sure that's something I would have said before their two games against each other, which, you know, granted is an incredibly small sample size, but it's also, I mean, you know, especially in Wembanyama's case, like some of the best competition he's faced, and, you know, him being incredibly impressive in that environment was really helpful for his draft stock. But, you know, Scoot also being as impressive as he was in those games, particularly as a playmaker, has got me really excited about what we're going to see from him this season. And, you know, again, I'm not ruling out the chance that Scoot might jump up to number one for me, but the total package for Wembanyama is just so exciting. And it's going to take a lot for Scoot to knock him off top peg. And I think it'll be very difficult for anybody else to knock either of them out of the top two. And I think it'll be, I see many more worlds in which Scoot ends up number one on my board than either of the two of them ends up number three or lower on my board by the end of the season.
I like the way that you frame that. So I have another segment that I'm going to include in the preseason top five. If you're looking at your notes, Nick, just a little audible here live on the show. With that being said, let's jump into our preseason top five, Nick. And the way that we're going to do this is we're going to start at our number five and work our way up to our number ones. And since you are the honored guest here on the very first Home and Away, I'm going to let you give your number five prospect.
I have Derek Whitehead as my number five prospect heading into the draft. You know, it'll be interesting to see when he actually gets back on the floor for Duke after his injury. But I mean, he's someone who, you know, exceptionally different from Wembanyama, but similar in that he checks a lot of boxes. You know, he's a 6'8" forward type who can do stuff with the ball in his hands, who, you know, works hard on defense, is, you know, not like elite athlete, but very good athlete. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's someone who will have a whole lot of chances for this Duke team this year to, you know, maybe not run the offense per se, you know, especially with Tyrese Proctor in the mix, but, you know, he'll have a lot of chances with the ball in his hands once he gets back healthy. And he just has such a well-rounded skill set that pretty much any NBA team could use. That's, you know, even though he's coming into the season injured, I have him at five just because I think there are a lot of roles that he can plug for NBA teams.
Yeah, I'll speak to him here in just a little bit because he is also in my top five. But I'll start with my fifth best player on my preseason board right now, and that's Keontae George out of Baylor. I love his overall game, Nick. Do you have him in your top five?
I don't, but I have him at six. So,
you hate his guts. Got it. All right. Yes, so
exactly. Despise him. Deeply despise him. As everyone knows with my thoughts on Davion Mitchell, I just despise defensive Baylor guards. That's just my least favorite kind of player.
Well, that's good because I fancy Keontae George is a pretty good offensive threat. Earlier in the year, I wrote about players that I think succeed the most in the NBA. And I think that you would agree that players that could score in a variety of ways are going to be pretty successful at the next level. And that's what I see when I look at Keontae George. I know that folks are high on a guy like Nick Smith Jr. I actually have Keontae ranked ahead of him because I think that he could do a lot of the same type of things as a Nick Smith Jr., but I think that he's stronger. I think that he's more athletic. I think that he is more prone to being able to get to the rim and finish. His shooting looks just as clean and just as pretty to me, and I like his defense a little bit more, Nick. So you already touched on my number four. I'll roll right into it. Then you can drop your fourth. Tariq Whitehead is my fourth best player for a lot of the same reasons that you touched on. I love his versatility. I think that he'll be able to give minutes in the NBA as he gets stronger, anywhere from like the two to the four, depending on the team that he goes to. I think that he's just a seamless fit. He gives any team that he goes to a little bit of a handle. He can score. I like his shooting projectability, and his defense looks like it's going to hold up at the next level too, Nick. So who do you have on your fourth spot?
So I have Cam Whitmore at number four.
Oh, okay. Which,
you know, again, going with someone who is unfortunately going to miss the start of the season due to injury, but
totally, man, bummer. Cam
Whitmore, yeah, it's really unfortunate. But Cam Whitmore is someone who, if you'd asked me this question 6 months ago, I probably wouldn't have had him in my top five, but he just demolished everybody in FIBA play. It was insane. Like, he looked like, you know, he was the best player on the floor basically every time he stepped on the court in FIBA play. And that really, you know, made me take another look at him because, you know, he was someone who I was, you know, a bit concerned about the shooting, a bit concerned about, you know, where he was going to sort of slot in on defense. And then he goes into FIBA play, just blows everybody up. And so I am really excited to see what he does for Villanova once he gets back out there on the floor.
What are your hesitations with him? Like, you know, I'm going to be talking about him here again here soon, just kind of spoiler alert here. What, when you're evaluating Cam Whitmore, is it because that he's injured, he's a little bit further back, or do you have some questions offensively? Like, what are you concerned about with him?
It's not really the injury as much as it's really two things for me with, you know, why I hate him so much that I have him as my fourth overall prospect.
Yeah, I can't stand that guy.
Yeah, absolutely not. For me, the biggest thing is where he plays defensively, because, you know, I think that he's not quite quick enough to guard on the wing and not quite big enough really to be a center. So is he like position locked at the four? Is he someone who maybe plays small ball five in some setups? I mean, you know, the defensive evaluation, particularly for someone his size who can be hidden a little bit better than like a small guard, it's not as big of a deal. And you know, certainly the effort is there for him. And you particularly see that in rebounding, where he's just an absolute monster on the glass. But I'm a bit worried about where he ends up positionally defensively at the NBA level. That's sort of my biggest concern with him. And then I'd like the shot to be a little bit further along than it is. I mean, the rest of his offensive game, particularly around the basket, is good enough that I'm not too concerned about that. That's like more of a secondary concern for me. Like, you know, if he becomes an average 3-point shooter or better than average 3-point shooter, then, you know, that I think bumps him up significantly and makes it a lot easier for teams to find minutes for him, even if he does struggle on the defensive end. So that's, I think, more of like a cherry on top kind of thing, where like, it'd be nice if he had that. If he added that to his game. But really, for me, my biggest concern with him is where does he slot in defensively? And, you know, if you get him on a team that has, you know, an elite defensive center to, you know, back him up and clean up his misses, then I think I might very well look stupid for, you know, not believing in his defense enough. But I think that my biggest concern for him at this point is just how flexible he is on the defensive end at the NBA level.
You know, that's fair. You know, I'll roll right into him as he's my third ranked prospect. I like the decision to go to Villanova for him because I think physically and what we saw in FIBA play, Nick, you're absolutely right. He looked like the best player on the floor every time that he was out there. I think his unique blend of power and grace, I think that it's just so much fun to watch. He can get past defenders at will. And if Villanova continues the trajectory that they had, you know, previously, and they just keep preaching that team style of basketball, I think Cam Whitmore, if he learns to facilitate at a high level, right? Like if he can make smart reads, he's going to be able to attract a lot of gravity when he's going to the basket. So if he can show, you know, the awareness and the capability to find players on reads off of his own movement, I think that that's going to make him a dangerous player. I do share a little bit of the concerns that you have defensively. I think that he's kind of locked as like a 3-4 as opposed to like a 4-5. And I guess it really just depends on the matchup for that day. But I'm a believer that when we evaluate these guys defensively, depending on the role that they have on offense, if that's minimized a little bit going to the next level, that frees up some of his energy exertion that he can give on the defensive side. So if he can, he has that level of physicality and athleticism offensively, I have a hard time believing that some of that won't translate to the defensive side if he buys in, which again, at Villanova, he's going to have to play well on both sides of the ball. And I think having that like pounded into his head, Nick, is going to make him even better than what we're even imagining going into the preseason. So obviously a lot of projection going into my evaluation in that aspect, which is why I have him third. Who do you have as your third best prospect, Nick?
I have someone that you have already talked about. I have Nick Smith Jr. as my number three overall prospect. And okay, I'm shocked that you, the Arkansas guy, has him so far behind where I do. But for me, the thing with Nick Smith Jr. is he has combo guard size, elite athleticism, really solid shooting, and not quite, you know, pure point guard level playmaking yet, but he's a good enough passer that I think there will be a role for him as a combo guard basically right away at the next level. And something that Tyler Metcalf and I have talked about quite a bit on the NBA Deep Dives podcast over the years is the sort of archetype of these combo guard type players who get a ton of on-ball reps early on in their NBA careers and solidify their passing to the point where it just unlocks the rest of their offensive game. And, you know, the two biggest examples that we always talked about were Devin Booker and Zach LaVine. And, you know, Nick Smith Jr. is not quite the athlete that Zach LaVine is, and he's not quite the mid-range shot maker that Devin Booker is. But, you know, I think that his combination of really good shooting, exceptional handle, great passing for a shooting guard, and developing passing for a point guard combined with his defensive effort. I mean, he's a 94-foot defensive guy, and that is huge when you combine that with the rest of his package. And, you know, in terms of him playing at Arkansas, I think he will have a lot of opportunities on the ball. I think he'll have a lot of opportunities off the ball with Anthony Black handling the playmaking responsibilities for Arkansas. And I think that's going to be a great developmental environment for him. And if he can show slightly better playmaking chops and, you know, slightly better decision-making with the ball in his hands, and if he is the kind of shooter that I think he is, then I think he will very firmly establish himself as the second best guard in this class behind Scoot.
Okay, that's fair. And, you know, my reasoning for not having an Arkansas Razorback ranked so high is I'm just trying to check my own biases. You know, I can't if I have him number three, Nick, people are just going to be like, oh, it's because he's playing for Arkansas or whatever. But in all seriousness, Nick, I want to ask you, I touched on it a little bit earlier. You know, he's going to be looked at like side by side with a guy like Keontae George, and just preseason tape, I just felt more comfortable with Keontae. What gives Nick Smith Jr. the edge to you over a guy like Keontae? And it doesn't seem like it's necessarily closer, is it, you know, with how far apart you have these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot less distance between my like 3 through 8-ish picks than there is between 2 and 3. Like, I think there's a pretty widening gap between Wembanyama, Scoot, and the rest of this class. So, you know, I sort of have a pretty bunched up tier right below them. I mean, my 3 through 7, you know, I could see them flipping very quickly early on in the season. And, you know,
I'm the same way.
Yeah. Like my 3 through 7, my 7 is Jairus Walker out of Houston, and like Nick Smith, Cam Whitmore, Derek Whitehead, Keontae George, Jairus Walker, like those guys could flip very quickly early on in the season, depending on how the early portion of the season goes. So I don't think there's that big of a gap, honestly, between Nick Smith Jr. at 3 and Keontae George at 6. The reason behind those gaps is I think Nick Smith Jr. has a much better handle. And I think that he because he has a better handle in my mind, I think he'll be able to do more with the ball in his hands than Keyonte will. And, you know, I think that the rest of their games are pretty close. You know, I do agree that Keyonte is a better athlete, but, you know, Nick Smith Jr. is not a slouch on the defensive end of the floor at all.
Correct.
It's not like you're comparing, you know, someone who is, you know, just lets guys blow by him on the defensive end versus someone who's, you know, an elite point of attack defender. I think they're both going to be two of the best point of attack defending freshmen in this college class. So for me, I think really the difference is I just buy into Nick Smith a little bit more with the ball in his hands than Keyonte. He also, I believe, has an inch or two on Keyonte. I think he's listed 6'5", Keyonte is 6'4", if I'm remembering correctly, which isn't that dramatic of a difference at all. You know, I don't want to peg that as a big part of the evaluation, but I think that just makes it easier for me to see Nick Smith Jr. being someone you can put on wings earlier than Keyonte, whereas Keyonte might just end up, you know, he's athletic enough that he might be able to defend threes in the end, but I think it's easier for me to project Nick Smith as like a 1-3 kind of defender than it is for me to project Keyonte that way, even though I think Keyonte is a better athlete. So I don't know. I mean, I really do feel like it's splitting hairs between those two. I mean, certainly those two and Scoot are my top three guards in this class, and I don't think that's going to change unless, you know, I shouldn't say that's not going to change because, I mean, it's, we haven't seen college basketball yet, right? Yeah. Like, you know, a month from now, my board could
stick
just
to look, your gut, Nick. Stick to your gut, man. It's not changing. It's not changing.
Could look completely different. Yes. No, I will stick to that forever. And Scotty Lewis will be a first round pick for me forever because I'm just going to stick my guts on everything. But no, I mean, I think it's a very fine distinction between those two. And I think that, you know, they're definitely the 2 and 3 guards in this class for me heading into the college basketball season. And, you know, they're the kind of players where even if, you know, say Nick Smith doesn't knock down his shots, you know, to start the season, or, you know, Keyonte gets stripped a bunch early on in the year and loses a bit of his confidence with the ball in his hands, you know, that could make a pretty dramatic change in the evaluation. But the thing for both of them is that they're both two-way players, right? So, you know, even if they struggle in some facet of their offensive games early on in the season, I don't expect them to be guys who play their way out of the first round just because I think their athleticism and defensive tools and defensive effort will keep them, you know, hovering around, you, even if it's towards the end of the first round, because for whatever reason, one or the other of them can't knock down shots. I think that because they have the kind of two-way games that they do, they will, you know, stay in, you know, first round consideration, even if their offense doesn't quite come through in the way I would want it to.
Yeah. And I think that Nick Smith Jr. is going to have the offensive role and the reins to be able to run with it a little bit earlier than maybe what we're going to see from Keyonte George, who's playing in a very crowded backcourt at Baylor this year. So a lot of moving parts on that. One thing that I want to suggest to you, Nick, is that I don't necessarily think, at least on my board, that the gap between the third prospect and the top two is as significant as what a lot of people would probably think coming into the season. I think that Cam Whitmore can rival Scoot Henderson and Victor Wembanyama within top two conversations. I think that he is that electric. I think, you know, we talked, you know, about the injury concern with a big that is 7'5", where or whatever he is measured out to, and the injury concerns. I mean, Scoot Henderson, we already saw him miss part of the game knocking knees, and, you know, the NBA history is riddled with guards who are very explosive and rim runners that very early on in their careers, they tend to sustain a little bit of injury problems too, but the NBA loves wings, man. And I think that Cam Whitmore with his power and athleticism, his finishing ability, that just overall sheer strength that he has and ability to get to the basket. I don't think that it's too far out of the question that Cam Whitmore, whenever he gets rolling in college basketball, if enough people are watching college basketball as opposed to the overseas play in Ignite, I think that Cam Whitmore can rival those guys. And y'all can call me crazy, but that's just kind of how I see it when I'm looking at the film so far.
It's interesting because, you know, I see Cam as more of like a pure power forward, I think, than you do. I think that, but, you know, I think that if he does show a little more lightness on his feet and some ability to play defense on the wing at Villanova, then I think you do have a fascinating argument for that top three, because you have three very different players who fill what I think are the three most popular niches in the NBA right now: your primary point guard, your defensive center, and your do-it-all wing. And, you know, if Cam Whitmore can prove himself to be more of a wing than sort of a power forward type, as I'm thinking of him now, then I think that does, you know, make a very interesting conversation. I mean, if Cam is someone who, you know, really shows up on the defensive end, who develops as a playmaker over the course of the season, I don't know. I mean, I think that even though I have him at four on my board, I think that if anyone in my top five cracks the Scoot Wemby tier, it's probably going to be Cam Whitmore, because Nick Smith Jr. is going to have to be better than Scoot at being a primary guard for me to think of him ahead of Scoot in that way. But if Cam Whitmore can really prove himself as someone who can play on the wing and someone who can create from the wing, then I think you get a much more interesting argument for that top three than if it's just, okay, Nick Smith Jr. I have at number three, but he's my second guard in this class because I have him behind Scoot. You know, I think it's going to be a lot more difficult in my mind for Nick Smith to overtake Scoot than it would be for me to say, you know what, maybe Cam can actually be that kind of force on the wing. Or honestly, I mean, maybe Cam just starts playing college basketball and just absolutely destroys everybody in front of him to the point where it's like, eh, you know what, even if he is kind of a pure power forward type, you know, probably got to slot him in there anyway. I mean, I hate even bringing this up, but I'm a bit Marvin Bagley shy about putting guys I think of as pure power forwards in, you know, the top group of a draft class, because, you know, that's certainly someone who burned the Sacramento Kings more than a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, I could see Cam sort of cracking that top tier as a more likely possibility than Nick Smith cracking that top tier, even though I would have Smith ahead of Cam Whitmore on my board right now.
I love it. I love it. And the perspective of how you're saying that, because Cam's a wing over Nick Smith Jr., even though you have them flopped on your board right now, just the ability for someone like Cam Whitmore at his position, that if he were to dominate, that kind of moves him up a level simply because of the position that he plays. So I love that. So Nick, with that leaves us with our top two. I felt like we just discussed that on the Scoot versus Wichter debate, but just for the sake of, you know, humoring me, your first and second prospects, please.
Yes. Number two overall, Scoot Henderson. Number one overall, Victor Wembanyama.
And it's the same names, just in reverse order for me. So Nick, one question I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot. I've actually had this conversation with some of the No Ceilings guys behind the scenes. I wanted to save the question for you specifically on the air. What do you think the odds of this draft class are for rivaling like the 84, the 96, the 2009, the 2003 draft classes as like one of the best in NBA history? Do you think that this class has the potential to be on par with those types of those drafts of old, like that, those nostalgic draft classes?
Man, that is a very difficult thing to say yes to, because, I mean, you know, just as an example, like the 96 draft class, you have Allen Iverson going one, but you also have Steve Nash going 15, if I'm remembering my draft years correctly, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, you know, you have an MVP going outside the lottery. You know, that's something that can really elevate a draft class that's, you know, impossible to tell in advance. Like the 2013 draft would rival the 2000 draft for the worst draft of all time, except that Giannis went at 15 overall and just basically carries that class by himself. And, you know, people make Anthony Bennett jokes, but, you know, that class produced a multi-time MVP championship winner. It just wasn't a guy at the top of the draft. So especially this early on, it's really difficult for me to stake my claim to, yes, this is going to rival one of those best draft classes of all time kind of deals. But I mean, you know, just comparing it to recent years, like, I think that Victor Wembanyama Scoot could rival Zion, Ja Morant as, you know, a very strong 1-2 punch at the top of this draft. And I think that, you know, the top five guys that we talked about, you know, I think that could also be very similar to a 2003 type situation where you know, one guy doesn't quite succeed in the way that we think he will, but, you know, of the top five, you've got what, four Hall of Famers? You have four out of five Hall of Famers out of top five. So I think that this is a draft class that, especially in the top five, it has a chance to rival some of those really elite draft classes over the years. And, you know, I think in terms of the first round, this is a pretty deep draft. I'm, you know, again, it's early on in the year, so this could prove to be very wrong. But, you know, I think last year there was a ton of depth in the second round of the draft, and I'm not quite sure this draft goes as far down in terms of depth as the previous class. And, you know, that sort of depth to the draft is where I think you're going to get the Giannis's and Steve Nash types that can, you know, really elevate a draft class from like, wow, there were these five awesome dudes at the top of the draft to this is one of the best draft classes of all time. So the short answer to my incredibly long rambling question is, I think it has a chance, but I don't think I can put that chance very high just because that's such a bar, that's such a standard to live up to. I mean, you know, LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh as four of the top five is
Darko Milicic.
Okay, fine. That's why I said four out of five, right? That's why I said four out of five. You know, given the pass to one of those guys to fall short, but you know, I think in terms of the top part of this draft, it definitely can compete with those other elite drafts. But, you know, again, with those drafts, I mean, 1984, John Stockton went 12th, I think.
Yeah, something crazy. Like, yeah.
Yeah, those drafts, you know, they have players who go well outside the top five who end up putting together Hall of Fame careers that I think really elevate those classes in my mind to the top of the top. Yeah. And it's hard to make that kind of prediction about any draft class, but the top five in this draft, I think I would put up against any top five in, you know, the last decade or so as being able to compete with, you know, some of those elite draft classes.
Yeah. Some of the other names that I have left off, like I have Nick Smith Jr. left off of my top five. I have Jairus Walker, Amen Thompson, Derek Lively, who was, you know, widely regarded the number one prospect in his own class. Like, looking at the depth, it's crazy to me. Like, I told some of the guys, I think this could end up rivaling some of the best draft classes that we've ever seen. I obviously could be very wrong without the majority of these guys not even playing basketball yet this season, but
yeah.
I like their return.
This is a podcast like 3 weeks from now, we could look back at this and be like, burn the tape.
That's absolutely right. But I mean, I'm looking at some of the returners in this class. I think got a really good chance of stepping up and doing a lot of great things. I love a lot of sophomores and juniors in this class, and not to mention a guy like Marcus Sasser, who probably could have got drafted last year, decides to come back and play for a Houston team that could win a national championship this year. So I love the depth of this class. I love the top of this class. I think that it could, Nick. I'm just going to go out and say, I think that there's a real possibility that this draft class could rival some of the tops that we've ever seen in basketball history. So, Nick, that's going to bring our show to a close, man. Like, we wrapped up the draft guide. You know, we showed the cover to our lovely audience. Again, Corey did a phenomenal job on that. We were re-emphasizing that there is now a united front on our podcast feed here on No Ceilings NBA, wherever you get your podcasts. Mondays, you get to listen to Draft Deeper. You already did, and you already heard me yesterday. You also heard Nate and my boy Maxwell. Tuesdays, you get to listen to the Home and Away show, which you're listening to right now, and that's going to be a rotating panel of No Ceilings Collective, and we're going to be bringing people within No Ceilings and outside. So you got to tune in to hear who's going to be the next voice on this rotating show of mystery that we have lined up. Wednesdays, Nick, that's your day, right? You have hump day.
That's my day. Yep. Thanks. Yeah, I have hump day. Wow, really appreciate that. Wednesday is going to be my day. I'm incredibly excited for the Deep Dives podcast now on the No Ceilings NBA feed. So we're going to be doing NBA deep dives every other week with Nathan, for the most part, if not for the only part, going over some of the top young players in the NBA, you know, discussing rookies and sophomores. And then on the alternating weeks, we are going to be doing draft deep dives, talking about, you know, some of the top prospects in upcoming drafts and talking about recent No Ceilings articles about those guys. And we're going to be doing a draft deep dives episode this Wednesday. And I am incredibly excited to bring Maxwell on board for the first Deep Dives episode on the No Ceilings feed. And we're going to talk about one of both of our favorite prospects in this draft, Jalen Hood-Trofino. It's going to be a great time. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and you heard Maxwell and I on Monday, and you're hearing Nick and I today on Tuesday. Tomorrow you get to hear Nick and Maxwell. It's a deep lineup of No Ceilings favorites. And again, just adding to the talent of this draft class that we were just talking about, Nick, Jalen Hood-Trofino is a guy that's not on a lot of our top 10, but he very well could end up being that level. And Brandon Miller, other guys, so on and so forth. Anyway, moving on, Thursday, draft act. I just mentioned Brandon Miller. If you have heard anything that Corey Toloba has said at all so far in the preseason, he loves Brandon Miller. So you get to listen to Corey and Albert talk about guys like Brandon Miller every Thursday. And then on Friday, the flagship No Ceiling show with both of the Tylers, Rucker and Metcalf. They're going to be wrapping up our weeks on our weekly 5-day a week lineup of No Ceilings content here on the podcast feed. So Nick, you already mentioned what's going to be happening Wednesday with you. You're going to be talking to Maxwell about Jalen Hood-Trofino. What else you got in the works, man?
So I will be bringing back the Sleeper Deep Dives series on Thursday. So similarly to last year, I'm going to start off with the first few articles being about guys who are sleepers for going later in the first round. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be covering Chris Murray. So, you know, okay, a little bit of dose of Keegan, you know, for the Kings, and then cover his twin brother, Chris, who I think is primed to have a really solid season at Iowa with, you know, some of the minutes that his brother was soaking up cleared out of the way. So probably going to be writing about Chris Murray for Thursday Sleeper Deep Dives, and then just, you know, contributing, editing, and writing to our conference previews, which the first one of those conference previews will go up shortly after this podcast does on Tuesday. And we're going to be running those basically right up until the start of the college basketball season. So, you know, we're really underway here at No Ceilings, and it's going to be an awesome year ahead. But Steven, you've got some stuff in the works too. You've got some really exciting stuff in the works too. So, you know, why don't I take the host chair for a little bit and let you go? What are you up to for the next few days?
Well, thank you, man. That was a seamless transition. So by the time that everyone's listening to this show, me and Corey are going to be kicking it in Atlanta together. Super excited about that. We got invited to be credentialed guests at the Overtime Elite Pro Day. So Corey and I, we get to watch scrimmages, 4-on-4s, 5-on-5s. We get to watch some of their drills. We're going to get a chance to rub elbows with, you know, Coach Ollie, their general manager, and a tour of their facility. So we're very excited about that honor and opportunity. Shout out to the Overtime Elite who have just been so gracious to opening up, you know, their facilities and access to some of the things that they have going on. They love what we're doing here at No Ceilings, and they're thrilled to have us. So I'm honored to be a part of that. And then also on Sunday, I'm going to be kicking off the Weekend Warrior again. And my first piece is going to be covering Harrison Ingram. And I want y'all to not sleep on him, because everyone talks about this guy like he's just done. Like after a freshman campaign, Nick, like everyone's just like, ah, we know who this guy is going to be. Don't fall for it, because Harrison Ingram is going to come back with a vengeance as a sophomore. And if you want to hear any more about what I got to say about it, go over to noceilingsnba.com. to find that article and the rest of the other great work that our collective is posting up on there 5 days a week, 6 days a week when I'm in town. All right. So that's going to do it here for the first episode of Home and Away. If you like what you're hearing, like, share, subscribe, rate, and review. Talk about the show with your friends, you know, whoever you're talking basketball with at the water cooler, share it with them, man, because we got a lot of other great things in store, particularly on Home and Away. You're going to love the guests that we have lined up. And again, follow everything that we're doing on social media. Follow us on TikTok, No Ceilings NBA. And be sure to go to noceilingsnba.bigcartel.com to get the draft guide and the rest of the outstanding merch that Corey Toloba is dropping out. But on behalf of my guest here, Nick Agari-Johnson, behalf of myself and the rest of the No Ceilings Collective, we'll talk to y'all next time. Much love, y'all.